Following last weekend's madness, it is time to preview the grand finale that is Six Nations Super Saturday. In Wales, Italy, Ireland, Scotland and France, England, we have three fascinating encounters to preview for you. And joining us today to do so and to give some stunning insights into his native France's issues during the Six Nations is former France centre and World Cup finalist Maxime Mermoz. Okay, welcome back to this week's official Rugby Paper podcast episode. We obviously marshal or convene the troops on Monday following the weekend's madness. So if you want a proper reaction to the weekend, do go and check that out. Today, we'll look forward to the grand finale this Saturday, Super Saturday by label, even if we've already had a Super Saturday of sorts. Three matches back to back, as is Six Nations tradition. Four teams can still win it technically, France being one of those sides. And then obviously the Wales-Italy game is a huge one as well. One of those games is Le Crunch, and joining us today after a few technical mishaps, but we got there in the end, former France centre and World Cup finalist, Maxime Mermoz. Can you hear me, Maxime?
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sorry, it's hot in France.
No worries. Well, we're very jealous. look, let's get straight into it. I won't sugarcoat it. I'm not sure you'd want me to, but before you guys won against Wales, it had been a very poor Six Nations, I think you'll agree with me in saying. Just give us your sort of general thoughts about what's been going on with Les Bleus.
It's a question.
C'est une question, ouais.
Yeah, for me, the three first game was a three lost. You know, three lost game. We was very, very lucky against Scotland because the ref decision was a bit insane and everyone in France was you know, like a bit surprised, and they say, okay, we support the Les Bleus, but it's a joke. There is, how I can say no try? Well, it was good for France, but it's like, you know, the tree who, in front of the comment dire, the forest, say the level, the team level is very average because they lost confidence. They beat, they have like a trauma since the last World Cup. But for me, they start to lose something since 2022 because the individuality, talent helped the team. And we start to lose in November 2022. Sorry. We start to lose our team spirit. And we play like worse and worse because it was not like a team, but individuality. The example, it was France-Australia in Stade de France. And Australia was better physically, technically, strategy. And Damien Penaud saved the game at the end because he stepped three guys and score in the corner, and we won. But for me, as a rugby game, it was really poor, and there is no. We start to lose the spirit, you know, and thanks to the French flair, we stay dangerous team. But unfortunately, after the quarterfinal, the World Cup, I say to in private, be careful because the Six Nations will be really, really tough for the team. And you start by Ireland, like in Marseille, the pressure was on us. And, you know, we miss a lot of good players. We had a lot of injuries. So it was a nightmare. And normally against Italia, thanks God, I don't know, maybe blow on the ball, on the Garbisi ball. But for everyone, it's like a loss. That's why we can have the player like Meafu, like a young good player, physically, technically. They have no trauma from the World Cup. So it was, a new start against Wales, and the score show the new spirit, because I think they need a few games to, I don't know how to say, digérer,
to, you know, to manage, yeah.
to manage the World Cup.
Maxime, this is very interesting from a Frenchman. So you even before the World Cup, it sounds like you were a little bit worried that the France, we were saying France are favourites, but you already saw a weakness developing.
J'ai pas entendu la fin.
D'accord, je vais expliquer. Brendan a dit que c'est intéressant d'entendre quelqu'un de la France qui dit qu'il y avait des problèmes avec le rugby français avant le World Cup. Quand nous avons dit avant le World Cup que la France était les favorites.
I comment for being sport, and it's hard to be to say bad thing because people think you're negative or but when you're worst player, you can see what happened on the field and off the field. And the thing is, I like to look to worried about the behave of the player. And for me, there is a leader and talented players, but some other are for me average, but they think they're very good. But that's the problem. And when you have like a Dupont, Benoît, or player like that, you just need to be a straight, regular player. You don't need to be exceptional. And it was the problem. If the opposite team can analyze how you play and what your weakness and your strength, I think we was ready to earlier. And more we approach from the World Cup, and better the team play against France. Like a friendly game, Scotland, France. It was really hard to play Scotland. We beat South Africa 1 year before the World Cup, but they had like a red card after 10 minutes. We was really close to lose against Italy in Italy in the last Six Nations. So, there is a lot of warning, but we continue to say now, that's it. In France, we have the public, we have energy, we have talent, we have everything. But for me, it was like a overconfident, and for me, I was really scared, and I thought we have like a big problem in semi or final, but not before. And what it doesn't help the team, we have a weak pool, really weak. New Zealand, we play one half, we just defend, and the second half like a counter-attack. After Uruguay shit game, I don't remember, Namibia, it was like the young team in a second division team, and Italia was eliminated, and they lost 100 points against New Zealand. So you never work like a strong opposition to practice for the playoff. Like South Africa play Scotland, they play Ireland, so there was maybe more involved, and the atmosphere doesn't help them because they was away from from France, but because the atmosphere doesn't help the French team, because they all think there was a superstar.
Do you think do you think Maxime, because France now has so many big forwards, huge physical specimens, and Galtier now is picking them all with 6-2 on the bench. Almost all your biggest forwards are now in play, and you can make the change after 50 minutes or 55 minutes, and you're still as big and you're still as physical coming onto the field. Do you think that's a change of approach now from Galtier? Do you does it worry you that you're putting the very biggest forward you can find in the match day squad?
I think he's trying to find the best balance between physicality and speed. The quality of French team, it's they can play and they can adapt. The thing is, we have a lot of physical player, but we have them in a championship in top 14. We have them to run. We ask them to play with hands technically, to read the situation. So I don't think he's looking for physicality, but it worked during 3 or 4 years. And for me, the game plan was the first 20 minutes, you score so fast. I don't know if you remember all the French team game, but after 10 or 15 minutes, they score 3 tries, few penalties. So it's like you start game with a 20 point, and after the team in front, the opposite team, because they master how they play as a team, and they try to come back. And after 60 minutes, always they come. I remember New Zealand, France, New Zealand. Maybe the momentum was for the New Zealand, and Penaud intercept against Ireland. It was the same, like a 20 point in 15 minutes after Irish team came back in the game. And I remember like a ruck, like a contre ruck, and they score. Always there is a lucky thing, But if you don't score fast, we can see it's really different. That's why I think he's looking for physicality, maybe to smash, to put pressure, to destroy, and after to do the substitution earlier in the game. But when you miss the physical player, where is the team the teamwork, It's sure when you have the player to play like that, it's easier. You can make you can see last weekend against Wales during 50 minutes, they can resist. Wales can resist, but after it's like there is no gas in the car. And then France, they have better bench,
You've spoken quite a lot about Fabien Galthié quite recently, and you said that, well, I'm taking this quote slightly sans context, but you said il prend tout le monde pour des cons, which means basically he takes everyone for idiots. Well, a slightly ruder word than idiots that I won't say. But just talk about what you meant by that and how Galtier has spoken after the defeat to Ireland, the narrow win against Scotland, where he called it one of the greatest wins of his career, which a lot of us sort of raised our eyebrows at. Just talk about how he's managed, won the France team, but also the general public during the Six Nations.
Yeah, I think he was in bad position because after the World Cup, everyone, because all of the French world, rugby world, give all chance, the club let free the player to practice for French team. Everyone helped the French national team, and it was like a big trauma and a big disappointment. So it's normal after they ask why to the coach, and instead of to say to ex to try to explain, what he does, what he did, he say, oh, since I'm a coach, we have like 80% of a victory. But it's not, it's always talking about what he does well. He's so beautiful. They play like a god. Everyone support the team. Everyone loves the team. That's why I say it's talking bullshit, and everyone is a bit upset because, okay, we all agree to say the French team give emotion, positive emotion, and we support and we are all proud. But he failed. He failed. So, and it's, you know, it's like a deny. He deny. He failed and he say, okay, I'm beautiful. You know, we play good. We have 80% of winning. I say, okay, but you failed. Why? Why you don't try to explain or, you know? And the journalist start to lose passions.
Yeah.
And after Ireland, what I hear, what I read, it was like a joke, a big joke. He said, at the halftime, he said, we give all point to the Irish team. I said, no, you just defend during one half. So you never had the ball. You play maybe one action. So I think he's always trying to avoid the real problem, you know? And like after Scotland, he say we play well and we are happy and proud. I say, I remember when we won 45 points against All Black, he was like upset, we can play better, we need to improve. But when you know, for me, it's just acting. He's a good actor, and I'm pissed.
Could I ask Maxime, and you might have to translate this for me, Ollie. I mean, I remember Gaultier as a player in '99, and when the French, against expectations, after a difficult start in the World Cup, reached the final, there was the famous game against New Zealand. And at that time, Gaultier divided opinion. He was quite a controversial player. He was regarded as quite a difficult individual. And there were people who liked him. And there were people who didn't like him very much. He was quite divisive in that way. It strikes me that it's the same as a coach. Does he have many sort of friends in the game? Does he have a big support from fellow coaches and players in the game? Do people like him in France?
To be honest, all people who work with or for him, they don't have a good opinion. The only thing we can say is he loves rugby, he's a good technician, but as a person, is a nightmare and doesn't the no. But for example, I was in the stadium in Marseille against Ireland. Someone, she works, she used to work with him when he was a Toulon coach. She told me he was the Toulon coach, you know, like it was a home game, and for the, you know, after. Like with the partner, there is a big reception, and the coach talked to everyone. He came after the game with a, I'd say, hangover.
Yeah.
Straight after the game, because he was happy and he earned a bit money from something, and he was drunk, and they need to call the security to evacuate him from the reception. Imagine, it's a shame, but it was a home game. You are the head coach, and you talk shit on the stage, and the security need to put you out. You know, it's a symbolic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He think or he pretend to be a gentleman. For me, inside, it's like arrogant. He's really arrogant, because when you give listen to everyone every day, every time, you know, it's because you're arrogant. And every player who play for him in Montpellier, in Toulon, they say he never respects someone. In national team, it's different because you don't coach the guy every day.
No.
So you just spend good time, you know, for 3 weeks, few weeks, and you have assistant coach. And the assistant coach, they are really human, you know, like a servant, like a l'arbitre, like a all assistant coach. They look after the player. They create like a link, a big link. And maybe he changed his way to manage, because you know he tried to put like a friendship with a relation with a player, because it's easier because you don't see the guy every day. You don't need to look after the family. You don't need to look after, you know, after them every day.
Sure.
I think it's a good compromise for him, because he's good as a technician, but the thing, I think ego came back at the surface.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What do you make of the difference then between and what you're saying is very similar to actually what I've heard Johnny Beattie say about Fabien, is that as a technician, he's absolutely fantastic, but in terms of building those individual relationships with players, both for the France team and for Toulon, Montpellier, etc. But he then spoke about Philippe Saint-André, who he said that Fabien probably is a better technician, but Philippe, he makes you want to play for him. He makes you want to win for him. Obviously, you played under Philippe when you were obviously playing for the France national team. What do you make of that sort of distinction?
Between
Entre Philippe Saint-André et sa capacité pour gérer les relations avec les joueurs et celui de Fabien aussi.
I think it's just my opinion and my experience, because I love human behavior. Philippe, I say in something in a podcast, is how to say not brave.
Courageux.
Yeah, not brave.
Oh, okay.
Because
Yeah.
when he was coach, he was scared about everyone. And if you want to talk to him, you need to talk to a third person to talk to him. I think he changed his way to have the relation with the guy. In Montpellier, when he was in Montpellier, because he's not enough in Montpellier. But I think it's two ambitious guy, you know, Fabien and Philippe. Technically, I think Fabien is better, but I think the weak point of these two guy, it's human.
Okay.
I don't say it's bad person, because I think when you're a friend with them, I think it's a good friend. I think they are funny. You can spend good time, you know. But in the rugby relation, it's really hard, because they're so ambitious. They are ready, you know, to do maybe bad thing just to save and to stay. You understand?
Do you...
But I respect, because they was, they are, or there is, or I, but they was they reached as a head coach French national team. So congratulations. But I have no comment on peut dire no admiration.
Yeah.
Just respect. Respect, but not admiration. That's a big difference for me.
Do you think, Maxime, and this is not just the case in France, that there are examples all over the world, that sometimes the very best coaches at that time for Test rugby, they get the job too late when they're too old, when they've lost some of their energy or they've lost some of their influence. I think of Guy Nobès, who was, I mean, the way we saw him in England and the way we'd become used to Toulouse success was a fantastic coach, a wonderful coach. And he came to France too late to be... Is that fair?
But you know why? You know why?
No.
Because I played for Guinoves when I arrived. I was young in Toulouse. And I had him when I was in the French team in 2016. So Guinoves, for me, was like a big, like a, not my mentor, but he was like a big mentor for a lot of players.
A big influence, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing, he was the king in Toulouse.
Yeah.
And he stayed until to dive in Toulouse. And when he was so deep, he said, okay, I'm okay for the French national team, you know, but it was too late. It's like when you have a big business, like a, you know, when you have a restaurant, you have success. And when you are at the top, it's time to sell. Him, he wait, you know, to be in the bottom to sell the restaurant. It was too late.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think he doesn't really want to coach the French national team because he was scared to lose everything, and he stayed in Toulouse because he controlled everything in Toulouse.
Sure.
You know, the best friend was on the board to decide everything. If someone is can help the team up, he fire him. Because he wants to be the chef, the chief,
yeah,
the president Buscatel. So no wave, just take your money, okay, good talk. Let me manage the club, and when you won trophy, what you can say? Congratulations, that we are the best. But that's why I think. When Bernard Laporte was president, he fired him. There was in a court, like a big trouble. He won, but even if he won money after the to be fired, I think ego and comment on peut dire, it was like a humiliation for him.
Yeah,
we don't talk about money. We talk about ego, and it was a big humiliation because. The new generation can be a coach like the whole one, and he failed too.
What do you make then? Obviously, we've been speaking about basically man management quite a lot, and there's been a sort of rumor in the press this week about Cameron Wauke and the fact he obviously wasn't selected, and he seems to have fallen out of favor a little bit. Since the World Cup, obviously we've mentioned that France are now picking their biggest players, and he's, you know, he's not as big as Pasolo, Tuolangi, and Emmanuel Meafu. Wauke was supposed to go to Cardiff as the 24th man, but he didn't. He went back to his club. So, what do you make it? Do you think that's maybe a sign that amidst all this potentially poor man management in France camp, that there are some problems?
Alors. To be honest, I saw like a title in the paper. We explain why Wauke preferred to play for Racing instead of to be a extra player in Cardiff. And I know Toulon was upset because normally, if Toulon can take like a international player, they're not allowed to play, or you know they. They let him. They let him with the French national team. So, and Toulon lost in the Racing 26. I don't know. I didn't see the why he preferred this, but we talk about a player, talented player. Wauke is a talented player, but he's a nut. His brain is like a nut, because you know. But I'm okay. I make like a really, really good paper on him in Midi Olympic, you know, the yellow paper.
Yeah.
Because he was so talented, and he played like New Zealand with Bordeaux. Every games he was good. And maybe few weeks later, he do some stupid thing out of the pitch, you know? And the thing it's now rugby is like a trendy. So there is big brand, Instagram, sponsor,
Sure.
and they all think they're a superstar. I'm
Maxime,
sorry.
can I ask you one question about centres? The great French tradition to me is you've had the greatest centres ever for decades. Do you think? Tell me, how good is Emilien Gatton? Forgive my pronunciation. And how good is Deportaire? And will they at the next World Cup be 12 and 13 for France?
Amazing. Gaëtan, I bet on him before the World Cup. I say normally will be involved. So he make like the prep. But I think that it's like a bet for the teams, and they pick Biel Biarré like as a young player.
Yeah.
But Gaëtan is not so far. And Deportaire, he played the World Cup under 20. He was so good because he's tall, he's fast, good step. And you know, they're not shy. They like to play. They like to have a responsibility. And I think it's a pleasure to see them play because they play with a smile. And they give a smile when we support them. And thanks to the bad result of the French team, they pick them. It's always like that. You need
Yeah, sure.
to have the opportunity, and I'm really happy to see them because in the top 14, I watched the game and they play really well. They fast, and the good thing it's Deportaire like to play 12, and me I'm pissed to see number 12 like 110 kilo. They need to destroy to you just need clever man. You just need a good handsman, you need good step. When you speed, you always can be physical. And they all may be quite tall and really athletic and a good mobility.
Yeah.
They can kick, they can do everything. I think it's a really, really good for the future. I love them.
Yeah, great to watch.
Yeah, no,
Will we ever see Maxime another Didier Cordonnier, or is nobody that small ever going to play at number 12 ever again?
Well, Maxime just shook his head.
Yeah.
So I think there's your answer. And
Yeah, sure.
Maxime, I know you're roasting in the car, so I won't keep you too much longer. There are just two more, well, three more things I want to ask you. The first thing is about the fly half position. Obviously, the Mathieu Jalibert and Romain Ntamack debate has been going on for 3 years now, and we've always sung Jalibert's praises on the podcast. Until this Six Nations, in which we've seen maybe a different side to Jalibert's game. Do you think France are missing Ntamack, in that when France are on the back foot and they're having difficulty and they're struggling, Ntamack is able to manage a game and marshal the troops in a way that Jalibert isn't?
Don't talk to me about Jalibert, please. He's, just I give you a clue. He is or he was a good friend of Wookiee. They are both talented player, but go on Instagram because they go to Louis Vuitton fashion show. They go in Marrakech with famous people. They think they are famous and talented. They miss humility.
Yeah.
That's all. They have talent. They have talent. But they miss humility. And I play with Ntamack, the dad and the son, and Ramos. And to be honest, I love to play with Ntamack, but Ramos is, I'd say, underrated.
Yeah.
Because he's so important in a game, because he talk a lot, he decide, he read, he can do everything. And the best thing, it's Jalibert injury, because Ramos, he play for the team. He can manage Le Garec, because Le Garec is really excited player.
Oh, good
You
player.
know? And yeah, good, but you know, you need to calm down sometimes. Yeah, but the good balance is Ramos is, he has more experience and he can calm, you know, against Wales sometimes. Maybe with another fly half, you play more and more and more and more, but no, just one kick in the corner, you know, to put pressure, you know, he give confidence to the team. And French team miss Ntamack, but Ramos is so good, so I'm not stressed for them. But we see Lucu and Jalibert, they have three games to try to put like a Dupont and Ntamack in the memories, and they think it was the opposite.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
That's a good way of putting it.
But
yeah.
the weird thing is, they play well with Bordeaux, with UBB, and they score a lot. They play well in the European Cup, and in top 14 they really good. So we can see the difference between the top 14 and the international level.
I just want to ask you about your predictions for the weekend. Obviously, despite everything you've been saying about France, you've said to me that France are going to win against England by 20 points. Obviously,
yeah.
England.
I don't know. I don't know if it's prediction or hope. But the thing is, they decide to change the mentality. Their mentality, and they put ball on the table against Wales, and they're really, I'd say, not confident, but they really want to win home. That's what they say. They just want to win home. Now they say, okay, we won in Cardiff, it's okay, but I think they want to have the love of the public, and when you play with family, friends, or home game, it's always different. So I think they have a power, they have everything to like a déclic, you know, like a déclic in the mind to do something good. And I'm not sure about the England team. They play not bad, but English team looks heavy, you know, not mobile, you know. They look heavy, strong. They love to go at the gym, but they're good player like Ollie Lawrence, or you know, I love this kind of player. But the forward, I'm not sure about the forward.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so you've gone 35-17 as your prediction. And the only other prediction I wanted to ask you about, and this is the last thing I'll ask you, I promise, what you think Italy are going to beat Wales in Cardiff. So just talk me through that one.
But for me, they beat France.
Yeah.
They play well in Ireland. I don't know if you remember, but it was like a tight score until the 70 minute, and they won against Scotland. They are full of confidence, and Wales, I think it's you know, it's really different. So what do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, we've
the momentum, it's from Italy side.
Yeah. We've all got Wales to win, but we did our scores at the start. Avant le tournoi. Alors, we would have probably changed. Well, moi, j'aurais changé ma prédiction si je pouvais, mais je ne peux pas. Alors, yeah. Okay, Maxime, by all means, get going. I don't want to keep you in the car any longer, but thank you so, so much for joining us. And yeah, bonne chance pendant le weekend. And so if France end up winning, maybe we can get you back on the podcast.
Yeah, pleasure, and I'm sorry for the car because I lost everything, too hot, my AirPod, everything. So it's like
No, you played
adaptation,
a blinder,
okay?
Maxime.
Like
Thank
in
you very much.
like on a pitch, adaptation.
Yeah, exactly. Adaptation amidst adversity. Right. Ciao, Maxime. Take care.
you.
And don't forget, God save the king.
Oh, yeah. He
Good luck.
needs,
Good luck.
yeah. This from a Frenchman.
Yeah. Good luck.
You later, Maxime. Take
Cheers.
care.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, let's get your reactions to all of that. There was quite a lot to digest there. Cameron Wauke and Mathieu Jalibert think they're world-renowned celebrities, or act as if they are. Fabien Galthié is, well, he had some quite choice words about him as a person, and nobody likes
Well,
him.
we've hinted at that in the past, haven't we?
Yeah.
Or I probably have that. I had quite a bit to do with Galtier back in the day when he was coach of Stade Francais. And I mean, he would be the first to accept that he is not everyone's cup of cafe.
No.
And everything we read about him, his career tells us that he is a prickly character, Gaultier, and you can imagine that when things are going wrong, the prickles are pretty evident. And of course, the people who he's not got on with in the past are queuing up, or were queuing up pre-Wales, to really criticise him. I mean, it didn't take long for the critics to come out of the woodwork and start chucking things at Gaultier.
But wasn't it interesting from Maxime? And I hadn't really thought about it like this, but I get the feeling he genuinely had worries well before the World Cup. He wasn't as impressed with France as the rest of us may be. And I think what he was sort of saying was that, two great players, well, Dupont and Tamac's very good moments, he produces were, and Penaud were papering over a lot of cracks that he could see anyway. And I'm thinking back, he's right. Those fantastic autumn international wins they had. Australia, he mentioned with the late Penaud try, and even the previous autumn they had late wins, didn't they, against South Africa? Was it even New Zealand? It was all harum scarum stuff. The results could have gone the other way. So perhaps I think he's onto something there. They
You
perhaps they weren't.
sometimes get suckered in on that, don't you, Brendan? That sometimes we feel it's a mark of a good side to get out of tough games with
Yeah, that's what
tugs.
we write, isn't it?
And you
Look at that.
say,
They got out of it and they won. Well, you could say.
we all get used to France having a good day and winning by 30 and tripping the light fantastic. And suddenly you've got a French side. And we tend to think of that as a mark of better discipline. And a better application, maybe the things that traditionally we haven't associated with French sides. And suddenly we're there thinking they're getting out of these tight games against good sides because they're more of they're applying themselves better because they're more disciplined. But actually, from the inside, it looks different. Someone like Maxime Mermoz, who crikey was a good player. Marc Lièvremont, when he was coaching the side, called him undroppable. He was a really, really good player. Not the biggest, name in English terms, but a heck of a player. And he's looking at it and thinking, actually, this isn't what people think it is.
And again, he made a very good point about, I mean, looking back a little bit now, World Cup, they were in a soft pool. Other than the first match, and they only played the second 40 minutes of that first match, they didn't get a hit out until the quarter final. So again, that helps explain the World Cup dynamic. But throwing it forward to the tournament now, yes, they weren't perhaps in any way near as good shape, mentally or physically, as we thought. And my God, what an important win that was last week.
Yeah.
Now, looking back, there's no way they could have lost that, you'd think. But if they had lost that match, my God, they'd be in trouble. Gauthier'd be in trouble now, wouldn't he?
Oh,
I can't
crikey.
help thinking. Serious
Crikey.
trouble.
And it was a game, and we discussed this previously on our previous podcast. I mean, it was weight and power off the bench that won that game for them. That, you know, Wales stopped coaching when the second heavyweight pack came on. That was when a smaller, tiring Welsh side found themselves unable to hack it. But without that, you know, it wasn't a pretty victory.
No, it was decisive, and it was it relieved the pressure big time, but it wasn't a pretty victory, no.
If you are going to try and find an explanation for our shoddy France Grand Slam predictions at the start of this tournament, I suppose that interview with Maxime just then has given a pretty decent answer, just in terms of the fact that obviously the individual talent, which you see in the top 14, and you also see those units working very well. He spoke about the Bordeaux halfback unit or halfback unit. It cannot possibly translate into a team where you're right, you're there for a few weeks, you're maybe not particularly managed particularly well. And also, then you're obviously starved of said talent in the form of Dupont and Tomac. Obviously, Aldrit has missed a game or two, maybe just one game now. But it's a pretty decent explanation as to why we were sort of so tunnel vision. France, their domestic
I
game
shall
was.
be quoting him extensively in future articles.
Yeah,
I mean, look, you can make a case, can't you? I mean, the French team pre-World Cup, when it was operating at its hottest, a hell of a lot of that side either picked up long-term injury and then were coming back and weren't quite what they were, and that's probably the case with someone like Cyril Bailly. It's, you know, someone like Olivon is back now, but maybe not playing at the fever pitch that he was playing, you know, 6 months or a year before, you know, in the Six Nations before the World Cup, when they were extraordinarily impressive players. Gélon, very important to them, and you know, he's in a pickle. We've discussed Cameron Wachee, who, and Maxime said, you know, in a couple of the games that they played against New Zealand, he looked like the absolute epitome of a modern, game-changing, mobile, ball-playing, line-out winning lock. Absolutely fabulous range of talents. But, you know, Maxime's told us that it's not quite together for one reason or another, mostly to do with social media, it seems. You've lost Dupont. They've lost Ntamack. Donty, you know, seems, you know, he's not fit enough to play more than 20 minutes, so he gets himself sent off.
They lost Clement, who's
So,
an important player and did very well when he came back.
you know, it's that side at one stage or another has sort of been in bits. They're still on the field. Most of them are still on the field, but they're not quite what they were when they were at their fittest and firing at their hottest.
However, I would say it's quite worrying, not worrying, challenging for England this weekend. And we know we do our, predictions 2 months ago, basically, and it's always tempting to change them. This is the one weekend I'm feeling a bit nervous because you really would be tempted to. I think France will be all the better for that win. And can England back up what we agree was one of their best performances in modern times? So that's absolutely fascinating dynamic. I think I've gone down for a draw. I don't know what made me think that. I think the odds slightly favour France now. And then with the Wales, the Wales Italy one, I like to think I went for a fairly close scoreline, but I just thought home advantage. But obviously Italy are now on a bit of a roll, and we weren't necessarily expecting that either. So if we were predicting anew, I think we might have a rethink this weekend. But the fun of it is trying to do it 2 months ago.
Well, exactly. We've got two draws predicted this weekend because Chewy, you're top of the league, but obviously a draw, you shoot yourself in the foot with the predictions league because it's so hard to get the result correct and so unlikely. You've got a draw between Ireland and Scotland.
It's not about the winning for me, Ollie.
It's
It's about
about
the taking part. I'm a sort of latter-day Corinthian.
Just a reminder that you are top of the league, so you, I don't
Well, that's his maybe,
Smell the roses. Go on, smell the
but
roses, chap. It doesn't happen very often.
that's why you've never been on the pitch and you've always been beside it reporting, Chris.
I feel yes. Well, that's probably true. I mean, any time I actually played in what's laughably called my rugby career, it was really a triumph over my own cowardice just to take the field. So it wasn't as though I took the sort of Abdel Benazi, Michel Palmier approach to I'm going to go out there and duff everyone up. It was just getting through a game and feeling good about myself because I conquered a weak part of myself.
Oh God, it was philosophical stuff here.
Well, deeply philosophical
On philosophical stuff, I've got a little suggestion about Scotland because all Twitter's been alive this week about why Scotland can't finish things off, why they can't act calmly and correctly. What was Woodward's expression? Teacup, thinking correctly under
thinking
pressure.
correctly under pressure, yeah.
They just keep blowing leads, don't they? And the only thing I can think of is that if you look at the DNA of their team, they've got no winners, have they? Glasgow and Edinburgh, and unless I've missed something, have never won any sort of European trophy. I think Glasgow did win the
Glasgow
Celtic League
won
once
what is now
at
the
one point.
URC, didn't they? When Gregor was
Yeah.
there.
But even Finn, did Finn win big trophies in France? He played very, very well. So I'm just sort of searching for a reason why Scotland can't close out games they should win. And it seems to me that they are a little bit short on that hard edge winning nous. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's true. Also, at the end of the day, they're not strong enough off the bench. They're not really good enough at lock. Much as I admire Gilchrist and Cummins and the Greys, they're bloody good players. I mean, it'd be ridiculous to say that they weren't. But I don't think at the very top level they are an Itoje and whoever. It's they're not quite there. That's a slight weakness in their game. So they don't have the tight options to go to.
They can't bolt a game down when they suddenly
No,
need
they
to.
can't close. They can't close a game down.
No, I think that's a good point, actually.
It's very difficult for them. And Finn's got all the skills in the world, but it was patently obvious, I thought, against Italy, how much they missed Tuipulotu.
Yeah.
And I, that's not to say that Cam Redpath isn't a good player. He's a terrific player. But, defensively, when they needed a shut up shop, they didn't have the people on the field who were particularly brilliant at shutting up shop. No.
Yeah.
You are right. Just going back to what we were saying about England, I think it's interesting, obviously, what's been reported about the Wales game, the France-Wales game, that is Wales knew exactly what was coming, but they couldn't stop it. And you just wonder, I know Maxime said that England look a bit heavy, and well, that's maybe one of the things I didn't necessarily agree with too much. I think England's pack is more mobile than it's been, certainly the back row. How do England stop what's coming, which is at 50, 55 minutes, you're taking a tired 300 kilos off the tight side and you're bringing on a fresh 300 kilos. How do England combat that? Do they combat that, or do they run a France pack ragged for as long as they possibly can by playing a high tempo game like they did against Ireland and just hope that both of these new packs or both packs get tired?
Well, it's a classic dilemma, and I look forward to Chris coming off his long run this weekend. I think he's going to really dive into this replacements business. But absolutely, I'd want and love to see England play like they played last week. That was what the England I want to see, the high tempo. And high tempo is not just running the ball willy-nilly, it's doing everything at speed and with purpose. And that should get its reward later on. But against this French team now, if you haven't got this lead, I think that's what Maxime was trying to say at one stage. You have to make the fast start pay. You have to get the lead. If you can't do that, you know what's coming, and then, therefore you think, well, do we pack the bench so we can somehow resist that? Do we go 6-2 or even the South African route 7-1? and get some really big units on the bench. And this is going to be a dilemma for England this week. I'm going to be fascinated with the selection, actually, how they go about this.
Well, I was slightly surprised that Maxine thought that that the England pack on the basis of last Saturday was sort of one-paced. But it is true that if you're going to play Chesham at six, that ain't the most mobile. And then it depends what you mean by mobility. I mean, it didn't seem to me that England were playing in the furthest reaches of the field on Saturday. What they did was they did what they did at a ferocious tempo, and it discomforted Ireland, who are used to playing the game at their games at their pace because they're so organised. And they're so aware, they're so much on the same page and so aware of their game plan. And, you know, they've been able to control those things, but things bust up for them. You know, Gibson Park wasn't the scrum half for as long as he usually is. And he's absolutely key to them. And it was a very tight game. I do think there's a bit of an overreaction. David Flatman, I see, put out a tweet after the game saying, he was joking, does this now mean England are number one in the world? Well, South Africa are number one in the world, so it was done from a slightly wrong basis anyway. But there's a danger of overreaction. It was a terrific game at Twickenham on Saturday, and it was played at a very, very high pace. But really, one swallow doesn't make a summer. So England need to back that up. They got a couple of players who are playing absolutely out of their skin. Ben Earl is on a golden streak. Absolutely brilliant, and fair play to the guy. Outstanding. You know, Alex Mitchell's return made a big difference. Yes, they've got to move that. I think they have to move that French pack around. But what they have to do more than anything is play that tempo. Because there's no way on earth that the Miafus and the Coloms and the Atonios and what have you will want to be playing for very long at very high speed.
And in that respect, it's a huge shame that Cunningham South has picked up this injury.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're thinking, how can England counter a team like France off the bench? Well, if you're going to go down that route of hitting fast and hard, running them off their feet, my God, you want him in action, don't you, all the time? I don't know. This might be the match where Alex Cole gets a bit of a on the bench. Very mobile unit, can cover the back five. You know, because England have got to think how they're going to match France off the bench. So, yeah, interesting selection coming up, I'd say.
I think we should go over the permutations for Saturday. Obviously, I did mention at the start of the episode, four teams can technically win it. And I say technically in the sort of loosest sense of the word. So, obviously, Ireland win in Dublin, it's lights out. They've won the championship. If Ireland lose without a winning bonus point and England win with a bonus point, England win the championship. Scotland need to win by 80 points against Ireland, which is less likely. And France need to win by 80 points against England, and they need Ireland to lose without getting anything from Scotland, which is even less likely. So that's the sort of permutations for Saturday. The flip side of it is obviously Wales and Italy are fighting for the wooden spoon, which is, I think, up there with, you know, England, well, with the other two games in terms of fascination. Yeah. Wales haven't gone winless since... Actually, go on, pop quiz trivia. How long since Wales have gone winless in the Six Nations?
Well, I think I read 2003, was it?
Very that good.
Was 2000s last year.
That was the last time Wales finished bottom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Winless might be even...
No, they were winless in 2003.
Were they winless in 03?
They were, yeah. So
you're absolutely right on it. It's a really good fixture, this one. I mean, it is, okay, it's for the wooden spoon, but it is actually for something. And for Italy to finish fifth would be major. And Wales, despite all their rebuilding and young squad, they won't want to finish bottom. And there's another interesting dynamic. I cannot think of an Italy match, and I've covered most of them, where they go to a match as favourites.
Yeah.
And they probably go a Six Nations match as favourites, and they probably just about go as favourites, although, you know, home advantage. And Wales, I think, have picked their strongest team, bar none, this time.
Although, have they ever gone three games without... have they ever gone three games undefeated, Italy, in the Six Nations?
Well, they've only ever won two matches in any one Six Nations tournament. So I think you'd have to say that is probably right. They've probably never gone three matches undefeated in the championship.
Obviously, if they win on Saturday, this is their best Six Nations return in terms of stats because of bonus points and points difference, etc., which is a separate issue we may get into after the tournament, depending on how the table finishes. It may not be their best ever finish. Their best ever finish is fourth in 2007. And Brandon, help me out, maybe 2013?
2013, they won two matches and they beat Ireland at home in Rome. That was their last big home win, yeah.
Yeah, well, there we go. And
I'll
they
tell you
could
this.
presumably finish third as well. They could. It is possible.
This
Well,
is
if
this
they
is.
got that win they deserved against France, you think what a good season this
I
could have
know.
shaped up to it.
I think this is the best Italian side I've seen since possibly the Italian side that should have beaten England in 1998 in a World Cup qualifier at Huddersfield,
Yeah.
when they had a really terrific side. I mean, Giovanelli, Bergamasco, and Parise, I think, were probably the back row that day. You had
Not no, Parisi
Bortolazzi.
wasn't, but that was Bergamasco's debut.
You had
Tronti was just making his presence felt. Dominguez was just
Bortolami would have been playing.
Bortolami.
Troncon and Dominguez. I mean,
Giudice
that
brothers, I
decent
think, were still
side.
there.
Very good side.
Yeah.
And it's taken them a while, and there have been flickers. And some of us have wondered, after long, long periods of really trying to be as supportive as possible of Italian rugby, we've wondered whether they were becoming too much of a drag on the tournament. So you can't say that now. It's great. That's not to say that, in my view, there should still be promotion and relegation. I mean, how fascinating would that be?
Yeah. If this was a promotion relegation
This
match,
weekend.
loser goes into the playoff against Georgia or Portugal.
Oh,
I mean, that would
something
up the
else.
ante a bit, wouldn't it?
Something else.
Oh.
Absolutely brilliant. So hey, maybe we can revisit that at some point. But it's I mean, I don't despair of Wales at all, though, as I wrote last week. I mean, I think they're on a decent track. They're having to swallow pretty hard at the moment because it's a very unfamiliar Welsh side. I mean that is an incredibly green team. And I think that, they could have lost all four. If that side had lost all four games by 40 points, I mean, by a margin of 40 points or 30 points, let's say, more realistically, I don't think anyone would have fallen off their chair in shock. Seriously. Especially the way Scotland started in the first half in the opening round. So I think they can take a little bit of credit. I mean, they fed a hell of a lot of very, very potential rich players into that side. And if a majority of them fulfill that potential over the next couple of seasons, I don't think they'll be in a bad place come the next World Cup.
And that they'll be revved up on Saturday. I mean, George North retiring alone will ensure, an emotional pitch. Down there, plus, not wanting to be the wooden spooners. No, I think that's got the makings of a fantastic match. In fact, the whole weekend, when you think about it, although it feels like it's done and dusted, there's going to be, let's be honest, I'd be amazed if Ireland don't clinch the championship, but there's going to be a right old dust up for second place. And that's worth having at the moment. And it's a clear cut wooden spoon shootout. There's a lot of interest there.
And above all, there are three results that are ultimately very, we're not unanimous in any of the results with our prediction.
No.
One, granted, I think Ireland, Scotland, given Ireland's record at home and Chewy's just predicted a draw, he's the only exception. I think that probably is maybe a little bit more of a sure thing, no disrespect to Scotland. But the other two games I find really, really difficult to call. So that'll be very, very interesting to
What
see.
has the missing maestro gone with for France, England?
Who?
Nick Kane, the missing maestro.
Oh, the missing maestro. Sorry. He went with a France win. We all did except, no, we've all gone for a France win except you, Brendan. He's gone 35-23 to France. So also quite a big gap. Chewy's got quite the smallest gap of 4 points, by you, Brendan, obviously.
I'm not sure if I was doing the predictions now, I would put a lot of the money I don't have on a Scotland draw in Dublin on current evidence. But I think what happened to them in Rome will shame them into a performance. And they do owe Ireland something. I mean, once again, Ireland took them to the cleaners really at the World Cup. They didn't fire much of a shot. So that's, I think, twice in succession, isn't it, that the Scots have come against up against Ireland in World Cup pool games and not shown really. So I do think they'll be quite charged. That would have hurt them on Saturday, because actually a decent Scotland victory, as I would have expected them to record in Rome, and you know they'd have had three wins and a very narrow and a well they could have gone in on what should have been four wins.
And they would have obviously had a shot at, well, you beat Ireland and you get a decent points difference and you won the title.
Well,
They would have had a very good chance at that, which they obviously, well, they have a chance, but I mean, I was speaking to one Nick Powell before and he said weirder things haven't happened.
in fact, I mean, if the yes, if they'd I wish for their sake that the officials had just got the thing at the end of the French game right, and Maxime was absolutely right. That was a shocking call, an absolutely shocking call.
Well, Nigel Owens next week on, we'll definitely have a few refereeing things to discuss, of course. I was just for fun, I was comparing our predictions league to this time last year. And I should say that obviously we don't explain the point system because no one cares, to be honest. But there is a point system that we use consistently year on year. And
It's a, I've no, I didn't know that.
So it's the same system every year. And I won't explain it, but basically this year, Chewy, you're first with the special guest on 56 points. Last year, first place by this point was on 75 points. So we've collectively got quite a lot. And there were three other people out of the four, out of the five, sorry, who were also above first place this year. So we've got collectively
We've
somewhere.
had a mayor this year, is what you're saying.
We've had an absolute shocker. There's so many turkeys and wrong results.
So
And
what you're saying is, if I win this, and I've already told you how much it matters to me, if
yeah.
I win this, then I've won it in a crap year.
It's the wooden spoon of victories is
Well, that suits me, because I do a lot of cooking, and believe me, a wooden spoon is more use than a trophy.
Well, no, but look, I'll give you your credit. If you win this having predicted a draw, which no one has ever done. So that would be a very, very impressive way to win it. But yeah, so you're on 56, along with a special guest who this week is Maxime. I'm on 52. Brendan, you've roared back into contention, having been last by some way, thanks to your Italy win prediction at the weekend. You're on 50. And then the missing maestro, Nick, is bringing up the rear again, having finished last year. On 49. So we'll find
That's
out on
tight down at the basement, is what you were saying.
exactly.
Yeah,
But much like the Six Nations, there are still probably four people who could still win it. But again, weirder things haven't happened if Brendan, you go on to win it.
right. So Chris Hewitt is the island of the predictions table.
No, I think Max, given he's predicted a draw, I think Maxime is the
He's
island.
in top shape.
Yeah,
Right.
I think he's the favorite.
Yeah.
Well, we're 3 days away. Obviously, a lot of questions will be answered. And yeah, like I say, Nigel Owens will be on next week. So don't miss that, guys. Enjoy the weekend, and I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Rugby Paper Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use and recommend the show to your friends. The Rugby Paper is available to buy every Sunday, and to make sure you don't miss it, subscribe through our print, digital, and online options at therugbypaper.co.uk/subscriptions. That's therugbypaper.co.uk/subscriptions to get all our content for as little as 14p per day.